were issued a 7-day notice. I mean, to be fair, it probably took another 2 or 3 months before it came.
So there was no meeting?
Till today, nobody picked up the phone, called me, or wrote to me personally and said, here's the issue you have. Here's what's going to happen. But that site we bought in 2006, 18 years ago, and we paid $17 million in 2006. We borrowed $30 million to develop that beach. The pain and the hurt is that we spent $30 million developing the infrastructure on that beach. But you know, the biggest tragedy of this were the businesses that were affected by the losses of revenue. We had a beach hotel and people were sleeping in the hotel when the demolition started. We didn't have time to take the fridges from the rooms, the TVs from the walls, the mattresses from the beds, the pictures on the walls. We didn't have time to take the plates from the kitchen. There were guests in the pool. There were over 160,000 members of the beach. And someone has decided, or a set of people have decided, that a road infrastructure project is more important than socioeconomic activity along that 700-kilometer coastline. Look, unfortunately, I was the first kilometer.
Were you compensated for this?
Not a penny. Till date, we haven't been compensated.
Is there a promise?
Nobody has written to me and promised. What happened was a disaster of serious proportions, but you know, the truth is nobody died.
Is it still viable to invest in Lagos?
Let me say yes without a shadow of a doubt, by the way, because I don't want to create the wrong impression. Can you get hurt? Yes, of course you can. Would you do well if you have a good business? Yes, you will. Nigeria and Lagos presents a unique set of challenges and opportunities. $10 in Lagos can be $20 tomorrow. $10 in the UK will be $12 tomorrow. And all I say to investors is be smart, be bright, be wise, keep your eyes open. Real estate is a numbers game, and it's a timing issue with real estate. You can be Einstein in real estate and you still lose money. And you can be the dumbest investor ever and you can make a lot of money. Don't over celebrate your successes. That way you don't over mourn your failures.
Hello everyone and welcome to the KK Show, Key to Keys. Now right here is where we unlock the secrets in the Nigerian real estate market. Now today with me is none other than a visionary behind one of the biggest brands in Africa, Paul Onwenube. I got that right.
You got that right.
Oh, thank you. It's so good to have you here. You're the Group CEO Landmark Africa, right?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Thank you. The pleasure is entirely mine.
Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here and to share with us, you know, the Landmark story. So let's dive right in. Tell us about the Landmark story. How did it come to be? I mean, before the demolition.
So Landmark story started 27 years ago in London, England.
Okay.
So I founded Landmark then. It was meant to be a serviced office company. And our idea was to literally provide services to businesses that wanted to grow. So what we did is we looked for the best part of town and a real signature address in the building, and hosted different companies, provided all their secretarial services, administrative services and stuff. So we did that, expanded into Europe across 7 different countries, and it was fairly successful. Then we went into America in 2001. And then we had the disaster of the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
And we were on the 87th floor in that building in the second tower. So that was quite a disaster. It took us two to three years of running around just trying to work out what to do. We lost a lot of our staff there. And so that period passed. And around 2003, I thought, this time for Africa. So that's how sort of Landmark Africa came to being. So we then decided to export or import our business into Africa, but I didn't want a Nigeria business. I was familiar with Nigeria, not that familiar at the time with Africa. But so we decided to open across Africa. And so I chose 4 locations to start with: Lagos for the west, Nairobi for the east, Johannesburg for the south, and Cairo for the north. We opened these offices more or less simultaneously over the next sort of 2004 to 2006, and then started infilling. Within a 10-year period, we're in 17 African cities. So that was a good experience, but you know, and it was a time we came into Africa when Africa was wanted, right? So it was when all sort of the international companies were looking at it as the last gem and they really didn't know how to access those countries. And we found out our role was not just providing the offices, but we provided literally a soft landing. And that's how we came across so many different brands. But we also realized that Africa had problems that we didn't experience in the West. So some of the real estate laws were tough. The maintenance culture and the facility management mm-hmm. culture was different. Landlords were not necessarily institutional. There were people that made their decisions as they went along. And the sort of legal framework for leases and stuff were not as tight. So we decided at that stage that we needed to control our own real estate. So we went about buying pieces of land in different places. In Lagos, it was in 2006. The area you know as Landmark now. It cost an absolute bomb, by the way, right? And we bought in Nairobi in South Africa and in Ghana. You know, we had journeys in Libya, Angola. Mm-hmm. So we did that. And then we realized as well that the second challenge of Africa was, in real estate terms, is that most cities had the same issues of security, traffic, perception, beautification, services, customer services. So we thought, you know what, we'll put everything in one place. And that's how the idea of creating a business leisure lifestyle environment came along. So we bought large pieces of land on the waterfront in most of the cities. And we started working through this. And, you know, what I wanted to create at that time was a company in Africa, run by Africans for Africans. So that's the genesis, that's the history, that's the journey we're on.
And I think you accomplished that. I mean, talking about Landmark, if you're looking for a location or a destination here, Landmark is where you want to be. I mean, this Christmas, we've been like, okay, where are we going to go to? Where are we going to go to? And I mean, you've done so well. You know, I keep preaching, no matter where you are, home is home.
There's anyone home.
There's no place like home. So whatever you're doing, I think you should always have home at the back of your mind. Mm. And you had it in front of you. So what was your initial reaction to demolition?
Oh, so, I mean, let's put this into perspective. So Landmark consists of three parts.
Okay.
There's our business, our leisure, and our lifestyle, right? So effectively, what was demolished was our leisure business, right?
Okay.
What's the leisure element of Landmark, which, I mean, I'm not going to undermine that. It's a significant part of both our revenue and our physical infrastructure and our business, right? Mm-hmm. But it was leisure business. Initial reaction, you know, these things are tough, right? You know, you go through those five stages of grief. You know, the first reaction when you hear about it is shock, right? And then that shock slowly turns into anger. Then you realize that anger doesn't really help, and you turn into, I think it's called bargaining. You begin to negotiate, right? And then, you know, depending on how that comes out, you know, you start feeling quite, I was going to use the term depressed, but not in the clinical term, but, you know, you're concerned and, you know, you feel just deprived of natural justices, right? And then at some stage, you have to accept it and move on, right? So I went through all those five stages. Obviously, there are a lot of surprises, but you know, at the end of the day, you say, first of all, you ask yourself, how does something like this just happen? Yeah. And then you go through those emotions and you think, well, surely common sense will prevail, right? Mm. And then when that doesn't prevail, you sort of figure out and say, so what am I going to do now, right? And then you either lie down and cry or you get up and go.
Wow. So what were the financial and emotional impact? I mean, you mentioned that 6 years of investment wiped out in six hours.
yeah. So, I mean, we choose the term 6 years, but to put this in perspective, right, this was my life's work. So it was 27 years of hunting, farming and working, right? Mm. But that site we bought in 2006, 18 years ago. So it's not really, and we paid $17 million in 2006. Just to put things in perspective, 6 years was when we borrowed $30 million to develop that beach. So the pain and the hurt is that we spent $30 million developing the infrastructure on that beach. Half of that money you couldn't see with your eyes. I mean, it was underground. We had a water reticulation system. We had fiber optic cables. We had a 1.2 kilometer boardwalk. Underneath it was the drainage, the water, the electricity. I mean, it was a world-class, world service structure that you couldn't even see with the eyes. So there's that pain that you've lost. And we borrowed $30 million abroad. So you obviously have that foreign exchange impact at the same time. You lose the income that was coming from there, which we're using to do so many different things, as well as paying our loan back. Then you've got to begin to try to understand the impact on other on the ecosystem of the business. And the reason why we're a business leisure lifestyle platform developer is that you come to one place and you can do everything.
Everything.
So whether it's a conference, watch a movie, eat a meal, do some work, sit on the beach, have a party. I mean, you could do literally anything. So a major part of that was lost, and it had knock-on effects on the other parts of the ecosystem. But you know, the biggest tragedy of this were the businesses that were affected by the losses of revenue. So, you know, I'll start with the formal and then the informal side. So the formal ones were obvious, you know, all the businesses that were within the Landmark ecosystem and on the beach itself that were destroyed, they were destroyed without notice as well. Many of them didn't have time to remove TVs from their walls, you know, fridges from the kitchens and stuff. I remember when Breeze was being demolished, there were guests in the pool, right? So it was tragic. You know, there were over 160,000 members of the beach. We had 9.2 billion naira of members' money in our accounts. We had contracts. You know, when this thing was demolished, I had to negotiate. I think there were about 200, and we counted, you know, we had to go through it one by one, over 200 contracts. So whether it was things like FM contracts, supply of water, toilet roll, you know, fumigation, light bulb maintenance, you know, lifeguard contracts. We had a water cleaning system that cleaned the sea, and then the Norwegians did. We had signed a 3-year contract. We were in the second year of that 3-year contract. All these things were all prepaid and obligations. Sometimes you wish that there was a natural disaster, right? At least you know that it's a force majeure. But you know, when we talk about losses, it's a lot of people just see and say, well, you lost the infrastructure. It was a lot more. The guy parking cars on the streets didn't have a job anymore. The person selling sweets at the gate. There were people who built hotels outside Landmark that were full every time because of the this thing. I mean, to put into perspective, we had 4.5 million visitors a year. We employed 4,000 people. And you know, they say in Nigeria, the dependency factor is 16, right? So 4,000 people employ times 16. So the, you know, we're still seeing the effects of this entire.
Wow. So it's so good having you talk about it, because we've had a lot of people come on our podcast to talk about the demolition. Mm-hmm. And it's a different thing here from the horse's mouth. You know, everyone had something to say, which some people said it's not possible for the government to go ahead and demolish without probably a year or two's notice. And then they come like maybe 7 days, they begin to make it more frequent. And then hearing you say there was no notice at all is...
We had a 7-day notice.
7 days. Seven. Wow.
Yeah.
And that was short.
And one must be practical. So we had a 7-day notice. We were issued a 7-day notice. I mean, to be fair, it probably took another 2 or 3 months before it came. I was on my brother's 60th birthday. I was on a cruise in the Caribbean when I was being sent the Lagos State 7-day notice. You know, it was something that was going around on social media. And someone sent it to me and said, "Is this true?" I didn't know by then, right? So nobody.
So there was no meeting, nothing whatsoever.
Till today, nobody picked up the phone, called me or wrote to me personally and said, "By the way, here's the issue you have, right? Here's what's going to happen." A lot of it was over social media. So I saw that, came back when we docked in Florida, flew straight here and started trying to find out what was going on. So, you know, when you speak to people, you think, well, I mean, surely this is not going to happen, right? Because you ask a series of questions. The first one is why, right? The coastal road has been designated on Water Corporation Road. Why would it be changed, right? So it was meant to be in front of us, not behind, right? So why will it be changed? The first thing you say. Second is just the socioeconomic activity. We paid over 10 billion naira in taxes the year before. We employ so many people and so many visitors. We were the only business listed on the government's tourism website that was private. Everything else were government. You know, so you just think, no, it's not going to happen. People are jockeying, you know, and they say it's a coastal road, but the coast doesn't start at Landmark, right? Coast starts at Pedagri. So you also have, you know, so you say common sense prevail. That took 3 months. Obviously, there was a lot of conversations, but, you know, the day it actually started was quite absurd, was painful. Yeah, was strange.
I'm actually feeling pain listening to you right now.
We had a beach hotel and people were sleeping in the hotel when the demolition started. We didn't have time to take the fridges from the rooms, the TVs from the walls, the mattresses from the beds, the pictures on the walls. You know, you didn't have time to take the plates from the kitchen. I mean, that's how tragic it was. And, you know, one would have thought.
Wow. So what's your road to recovery?
So, you know, they say, success in life is not determined by the good things you do and the accolades you receive. They're determined by the challenges you face and how you overcome them, mm-hmm. right? Because that's the thing that actually does count. And, you know, believe me, Nigeria, Africa, and the world generally, but, you know, they're tougher in Nigeria than anywhere else. But Nigeria presents a whole unique set of challenges and opportunities, you know? And one of the things I learned when I was in school was, you know, a crisis, never waste a crisis. Because a crisis is a good time for opportunity. Mm. The other side of a challenge is an opportunity. Mm. So one has to figure out how to overcome its challenges and figure out what next. So we spent the last 6 months obviously doing that. You know, my mother used to say when we were young is, put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket carefully, right? Mm. And, you know, it made sense because everybody says, don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? And my mother said, you see, this is our family. All our love, everything is here, right? We're going to just watch it carefully and take care of it. So she was always very possessive about things that came into the family to disrupt us, right? So when people like I had girlfriends or my sister had boyfriends, you know, she was like, who are these people? Right? Anyway, so I learned life that way, about putting all your eggs in one basket and watching that basket carefully, because I grew up in that way. And that's what Landmark is all about. You know, when we sold our service office business across Africa, that's the history of why it was called Landmark Africa. We took all the money and we sold it for, gosh, I think it was just over $20 million, all the money, and put on the site. Plus the money we borrowed to build the site, plus the money we brought into the country from investors to buy the land. Everything was concentrated. And then we said, see this basket? We're going to watch it carefully, right? So when something like this happens, you realize that, you know, maybe mom was wrong. Maybe you ought to not put all your eggs in one basket. So going back to your question, what's the future? So three things. So one is we have to do some geographic diversification. We have to figure out where to go. So when something like this or anything happens, it doesn't affect you in such a devastating way. You know, when I count the losses of what has happened with the demolition of the beach, on the face of it, it sounds like a $30 million loss, but it's not. I mean, this is probably $60, $70, $80 million loss. And then on the outside as well, all the people around and the effect is probably, you know, $200 to $300 million of,
that's true,
of other people's investments, mm-hmm. as well. So we have to diversify geographically. I talked about don't waste an opportunity, don't waste a crisis and make sure there's an opportunity on it. You know, I had calls from three different presidents, African presidents, during this crisis. I didn't know them from anywhere. They literally found through their consuls, found me, made the call, say, sorry, I hear what happened. Tell me a little bit more about it. Are you willing to come to a country like ours?
Oh, wow.
So that's an opportunity in itself. Mm-hmm. So there's one of those countries we're going to relocate to. Then I also had calls from several governors in Nigeria saying, you know, I think you should come and do this in this city. Mm-hmm. It never happened to you here, right? it may happen to you in Lagos, but it's not going to happen here. So we had 12 of those, right? So we're selecting three. And we've been going through that process over the last 6 months. So we're going to have some diversification. We're going to diversify to two other African countries. We're going to go into three different states. We're going to move our Nigeria HQ location out of Lagos. And we're going to move our entire sort of events and tourism platform out of Nigeria. And then we're going to try to build and grow from there. We want to create a sort of West African footprint for tourism, leisure, and events. So you can have music festivals, school festivals, sports festivals. We can connect these places by cruise ships. We can really make Africa Buzz in Africa for Africans. So we've worked on that. We're in the closing stages of it. We're raising some funds as well to make sure that we can finance it. And as for our existing business in Landmark Lagos, you know, as I said, it was the most visited destination in West Africa. We need to find a way to replace the leisure element that we lost and recreate the business leisure lifestyle. We still have the business and the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. We need to recover financially as well. We're excited. The future is bright. You know, look, what happened was a disaster of serious proportions. But, you know, the truth is nobody died. You know, we've had disasters before. We've had challenges before. This maybe was the most publicly played out one. But, you know, when we had our 9/11 tragedy, people died. People I worked with died. You know, we had a tragedy in Libya during the war. People I worked with died. So this one, nobody died. There's a lot of commercial losses. The biggest financial loss that we've received ever in our history, right? But from a financial point of view, you can replace finances. You can't replace lives.
That's true. And I think your past events actually built you up for today.
Yeah. So, you know, life is a journey.
I know.
And every corner you turn, there are challenges and the opportunities. And, you know, and my mom used to say this as well when we were young, is, you know, don't over celebrate your successes. That way you don't over mourn your failures. Try to be balanced in life, right? So I
should bring your mom on our podcast.
I should bring my mom onto my board.
She's so full of wisdom. The demolition of Landmark cost an opera. Now, there were so many demolitions, but you see the Landmark pitch, my God. A lot of investors were like, you know what? If they could do this, who are we? You know, I'm not going to invest in Nigeria. I'm not going to invest in Lagos. Now, from your standpoint, is it still viable to invest in Lagos?
Let me say yes, without a shadow of a doubt, by the way, because I don't want to create the wrong impression. Can you get hurt? Yes, of course you can, right? Would you do well if you have a good business? Yes, you will. Look, Nigeria and Lagos presents a unique set of challenges and opportunities. And all I say to investors is, be smart, be bright, be wise, keep your eyes open, right? We know what the challenges are, you know. So, you know, this regulatory environment is a nasty challenge. One has to navigate it. You understand the infrastructure challenges, security challenges, the economic challenges, you know, the foreign exchange challenges. You understand what the challenges are. You know what they are. They're not that many surprises. The impact of the surprise is what we complain about, right? Mm-hmm. But there are opportunities as well, right? Very few countries have the same dynamics. You know, so there's this youthful population that are literally ready to go. They're smart, they're bright, they're hardworking, they're real, right? Don't underestimate it. So there's a big resource that's there that if they're trained and they're put to good use, we can propel Nigeria way past all the world powers. But they have to be trained and they have to be put to good use and they have to be taken care of, right? So, you know, at some point, you know, a set of governments are going to stand up and say, you know what, these people are important to us, right? They're going to take care of them. And if they do, you will see what will happen with Nigeria Blue. And you want to be there when that's happening. You don't want to be trying to come in at that time.
Exactly.
So Nigeria has its own unique set of opportunities. Is it viable? Yes, because there are opportunities. Are there challenges? Yes, be aware of them. Now, in terms of real estate, it's another thing. You know, real estate is a numbers game, right? And it's a timing issue with real estate. You can be as smart as you are as anybody in the world, right? You can be Einstein in real estate and you still lose money, right? And you can be the dumbest investor ever and you can make a lot of money. It's all about timing. So if you have a crystal ball and you get your timing right, you do well. If you get your timing wrong, you won't do well. So you have to decide at this point in time, is this the time to come into real estate or exit, right? And that's the only decision a realtor has to make, right? So whether you're a punter coming to buy or you're a practitioner building or you're a seller selling, right? You have to understand your timing, right? Because, you know, you have a product that 80% of it is imported. You have your foreign exchange challenges, you have your cost of living crisis, and you know, whatever you produce, somebody here has to buy it, right?
Exactly.
And you can only sell so many to the affluent because the affluent are limited in number. And, you know, I always say to people, whether you build a three-bedroom house in Yanipajo or you build it in Banana Island, you know, the fabric costs the same amount of money, right?
Right? That's true.
The only difference is the finishing, right? And the land cost. So one has to just be wise. So I wouldn't say, you know, avoid Nigeria's investment destination. I'll say tread carefully, keep your eyes open, jump in with 1.5 feet, right? But just make sure that your risk profile is high risk, high reward. You know, if you're a cautious investor or you're a low risk investor, I'll say stay on the other side of the border.
Now let's talk about due diligence. Because we always emphasize due diligence, but then they come back to, are you trying to tell me the landmark guys did not do their due diligence? It's been a debate, really. And we try to advise clients rightly. But then, was there a gap in your due diligence?
So, you know, I get asked this question a lot and, you know, privately, obviously, and I'm glad you're asking me publicly. I said it once on TV. I said, so we bought this place in 2006. Between 2006 and December 2023, we had borrowed or received investments from international investors of over $100 million. So if you're a business person anywhere in the world, you ask yourself, can someone raise that kind of money without due diligence? Because at each stage in raising money, you get due diligence from the banks, from the investors. So let's forget us, whether we did the due diligence or not, because of course I'm going to say we did our due diligence, right? So let's talk about the American investment firm, the British investment firm, the South African investment firm that invested. Let's talk about the banks, Nigerian banks and foreign banks that have invested. So, you know, we have a collection of international investors. Their hands are in the air because their view is. So we bought the site in 2006 within a master plan where the coastal road was on one side and the water was on the other side. It was waterfront land. So, you know, you don't pay $17 million for a site in the middle of nowhere. There was nothing around us. The closest thing to us was ExxonMobil, Zenith Bank, and Palms was being built. Nothing. We created the economic and physical and socioeconomic activity in that entire region, that entire area. When I used to say to my team, I wish I had money then, I'd have bought all the sites around because we made those pieces of land expensive. We built the roads, put the streetlights. So that's one. Then let me take you to the next stage. You know, the thing about real estate, you know why it's called real estate? Why do you think real estate is called real estate?
Like Fasimashi would say, it's the only estate that is real.
Spot on, is real. You can't hide. It's not this.
Exactly.
It's not on a computer somewhere, right? Yes. So you see it. Huh? Mm-hmm. So that's the point. So you don't sit somewhere for 18 years receiving 4.5 million visitors and mm-hmm. someone says, I didn't know you were there, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure. So that's marker two. Marker three, as you understand in real estate, at various times as you're building, you're going through planning consents and environmental studies and things. All these things are regulatory. They're not things you choose to do. You'd rather not, right? Because, you know, most of it are toll gates and red tape and. So you've gone through at four different times in the process between 2006 and 2023. We had planning permissions, the latest of which was August 2023, Waterview apartment block, right? So, I think it's only fair to say that if anybody is a business person, realize that the right question to ask is not whether a company like this did due diligence, is why did something like this happen, right? And what were the reasons why it happened? You know, so due diligence is not the factor. You know, we live in a country where, you know, I'm sure you saw all the... during the whole blow-up, you know, people were asking all sorts of questions. You know, I'm not even the government, right? I'm a private individual. So yes. And then you've got to ask, would we be on the government website as a tourist destination? The only private company in the entire country. Would we have paid our taxes on record? So you've got to ask those questions. So I don't think the question is for me. It's for the other side.
So yeah. What went wrong?
I don't know. Everybody speculates. Look, at the end of the day, the government has something called eminent domain. It has the right to do what it wants. It can go into your mother's kitchen and take it away, right? And someone has decided, or a set of people have decided, that a road infrastructure project is more important is socioeconomic activity along that 700 kilometer coastline. Look, unfortunately, I was the first kilometer, right? Maybe if I was sitting at the top to make that decision, maybe I'd have made the same decision. I don't know. People have to just make up their minds. Someone has made that decision. Our socioeconomic activity was inferior to placing this coastal road in that position at that time. Yeah. And we have to live with it and move on.
Were you compensated for this?
Not a penny. That's why I said I wish it had burnt. At least I would have had fire insurance.
Because, I mean, yeah. I'm so glad to have you here because we've heard, oh, lots of compensations were made.
Yes, no, people either side of us were compensated. Till date, we haven't been compensated.
Is there a promise for compensation?
Nobody has written to me and promised.
Okay, so...
Have I asked? It's the question to ask.
All right, have you asked?
Yes, yes, we've asked. Yeah, so we wait. We hope we will be eventually compensated. Look, I don't think that much damage to socioeconomic fabric can be made and that attempt to right that wrong is not made eventually. I would have thought, by the way, it should be done beforehand rather than after,
yeah.
Right? So people plan better, but, you know, eventually, hopefully, justice will prevail.
Could this similar situation happen to investors?
Well, I am an investor and it happened to me. So unless someone just hates my guts, you know, I'm a nice guy, right? So I like to believe I haven't fought with anybody. But so look, the simple answer is yes. But one thing, you know, I'm not going to ever, not yet at this point do is say, well, you know, Nigeria is a terrible country and people shouldn't invest and stuff because, you know, you'd be denying people an opportunity I took myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look, Nigeria has issues. There are regulatory challenges. There are infrastructure challenges. There are economic challenges and financial challenges. There are even, you know, political stability challenges, right? And economic variable challenges. But one has to go into them with your eyes open because the opportunities, the other side of that coin is full of opportunities.
It's
a place for high-risk investors. So yes, it can happen. It's happened to us. It's happened to other people. I think even Dangote had his own issues, right? you know, so you will have issues in a country like this, but you'll also have a lot of time to smile if you get certain things right. So I say, yeah, you know, don't let it discourage you, but be aware you can lose your shirt, but you can buy two shirts too.
How can investors protect themselves?
You effectively, I would say, when you're coming into countries like this, you need to have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. Because your plan A may not always work. And it may not work not because of you, but it may not work because of other people. So you must have a plan B. And your plan B may have issues. So you must have a plan C. So that's the first thing I'll say, right? And it's like a chess game. You have to think of the move ahead of the move. You know, the second thing is one I've learned just from this, my last experience, and I'll be honest about that. And that's one of diversification. You know, I've never believed in diversification. I've believed in focus and concentration. I look at things in a contrarian way. I say, you know what, why buy two shoes when you can have one, you know, and just take care of that one shoe. And when it finishes, you get another one, right?
Mm.
The easiest way to replace something you've lost is to get another one. Right. You don't have to get it before you lose
exactly.
it. Right. You know, but, you know, I'm beginning to change that view. Right. Because of the impact of what has happened. So I think diversification is an important thing. So when you are coming into a place like this is look at what your options are. So you're not vulnerable to one incident. Mm? And second thing is, you know, maybe one thing one can do better is, you know, just get involved in relationships with statutory authorities and stuff. You know, I came from a world where you didn't have to speak to statutory authorities. You didn't have to speak to the government. You know, the private sector was a private sector, right? We just did your work, complied with the rules and nobody disturbed you, right? I just think Nigeria is a country where you have to open those relationships. You have to speak to people. You have to have your finger on that pulse. You can't just ignore them. They don't like it, right? And when you need them, they don't want to listen to you because they say, well, you've been there all the time, right? so it's, I think it's important to develop those relationships. I'm not saying do the wrong thing. I'm saying develop relationships, speak to people, have your antenna out there, do your research.
The Lagos-Calabar Coastal Highway is a significant infrastructure, but it came at a major cost for businesses like yours, right? So how do you view the balance between large-scale development projects and the protection of private investments in Lagos?
Well, first thing I'll say, I wish it was called the Calabar to Lagos Highway. We would have started with Calabar.
Calabar, right?
So we would have had some time, we would have seen it coming, right? But maybe that's a question for Lagos and for the people who run Lagos is, I don't know why more attempts were not made to bring it the other way, all right? Or to work through that whole balance of socioeconomic activity and infrastructure. You know, I've gone on record, by the way, a coastal road in concept terms is an absolute smashing idea. It's meant to put tourism on steroids. So if your number one aim in that area or that country or that strategy is tourism, then you try to link your coast. But coastal roads are not actually on the coast, by the way. Yes, they're sometimes inside and they're not 20 or 10 lane highways. They're scenic roads that dive in and out of the coast, they wind in stuff, but it just generally slows people down and connects tourism. So that's an infrastructure project. There are many other infrastructure projects one can think of that a country like Nigeria require to, right? And they have to be done, and there's always pain. So don't get me wrong. I will shout and I'll cry and I'll moan and stuff because I'm affected. Yeah. But sometimes there's a greater good. Yeah. And look, who knows? I'm not going to judge this, right? I would rather it didn't happen because it literally destroyed my life's work, destroyed a lot of families and a lot of businesses and a lot of money. But, you know, if over 10 years it replaces that and creates a buzz and creates more business and creates more money and makes a lot more people reliant on themselves, then it would have been worth it. After all, what do people do? You make money and you spend it on other people, right? So if you lose that money and that money is spent on other people, then you're happy, right? Because yeah, you've achieved the same aim. If it's not, is where you're unhappy. So, you know, time will tell. How does one balance these infrastructure projects? Well, the first thing you would expect is decent research, right? And communication and sensitivity. That's the best way. If you, in your personal house, if you had rented, I know it doesn't happen in Nigeria, but you know, it happens abroad, you know, people rent some of their rooms to strangers, right?
Sure.
And you wanted to do some refurbishment that meant the front door was going to be blocked for some time and people have to use the back door. You know, you don't just wake up and do it, right? You speak to everybody. They may not own the house, right? But you speak to people, you get their views, you work through it. You know, so they're just, I think, when you're embarking on major infrastructure projects, it's very hard because it's expensive. Time is of essence, but you've got work to do. And, you know, I talked about coastal roads. Think of the North Atlantic coastal road. It took 17 years to build. Not because it took 17 years to actually build it, but because of the amount of conversations and negotiations that had to take place while developing and the studies. It's why, look at the Pacific Coastal Road, was 27 years. Even the one that runs around Cape Town was 15 years. China, that are used to building fast roads, they had a 52-kilometer road, right? That was 7 years, right? Because these things take time. Major infrastructure projects take time. And when I worked in London, I worked for a company called Bovis. I was involved in the Waterloo International Terminal. That's where that was the train station that was going to be the international terminal train station for London. So it was a major infrastructure project. You know, look, this thing was 20 years in the making. I worked with Patrick Crotty actually doing the, I said Patrick Crotty, sorry, he was a construction director, was a famous project manager in the UK, doing actually the construction for that thing. I was there for 7 years. We barely broke ground. I was already, you know, I had, you know, finished my MBA, worked in the UK, worked in America, worked in Asia. By the time this thing got built, I had gone around the world, right? And when I was telling people this was my project, they were like, what do you mean was your project? You've been all over the place, so, right? So these things take time, and they take time because they're important, you know? And I say to my team, never do important things as if they're routine. And never do routine things as if they're important. You need to understand what you're doing and then decide whether it's important or routine and do it in a way that celebrates the reason for doing it.
If the Lagos State government reaches out to you right now and says, okay, we have a land someplace, we want you to come and develop, would you take it?
Yeah, look, I'm a Nigerian. I went to school here. You know, I tell Lagosians that I'm a Lagosian, right? I went to secondary school here. Oh. My foundation. Yeah, I went to secondary school here. Yeah, in Frederick Common College, Lagos. You know, so I've lived more in Lagos than anywhere else in Nigeria. So obviously, I've spent a lot of my life abroad. But you know, so we've made up. I'm Nigerian as well. Yeah, so I'm Lagosian, I'm Nigerian, I'm African. So you can't run away from your country, and you can't run away from your state, and you can't run away from your city.
Wow.
So yes, I would always do, but the lessons I've learned, and you know, and I've said that to officials that, you know, I mean, these are hard lessons, and I tell you, you pray that people don't go through this in their lifetime, right? But you know, it's one to watch and see from a distance and say, you know what, whew, we'll teach this in business school one day, but this is tough, but I'm not running anywhere.
Did you have a mental breakdown?
No, nobody died.
No. No. Oh, really? So you were just good.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, you lose money, right? If what I went through didn't kill anybody, why should I die? Look, as I said, was I angry? Yes. You know, did I have grief? Yes. Was it destabilizing? Yes. Right. But the truth is, it hurt other people more than it hurt me. Right. For the simple reason, look, it doesn't change the number of meals I have a day. It won't change the places I go, and it won't change the things I eat. I'm not necessarily a wealthy guy, but I don't have a lifestyle. Listen, but I don't have any costs. I don't owe a single penny personally. Right. My children are working, but still living in my house. Right? you know, my wife is a high income earner in the UK. I don't have financial issues. So it didn't put me on edge. Right. But I look at, you know, Tokumba or Gechi, you know, the people who worked there.
Yes.
That had businesses that got destroyed. And those are the people that had breakdowns. Not me. I had pain and anger and reflection. You know, I had a lot of emotions, but it wasn't a life or death interview. Nobody died. I tell you a story. I was during this whole period, and I think it was the day after they had started the demolition. You know, yeah, as you can imagine, my phone was ringing nonstop. I mean, people were at my door nonstop. So I was going somewhere to see a senior government official. It was 6 a.m. in the morning, 6:30 in the morning. And a friend of mine calls me. And he lives on the way to this place. And it was 6:30, he's calling me in the morning, but I couldn't answer. And then I then called back as I got into my car. I was driving myself. And he said, oh, he's in front of his house. I said, oh, I'll stop by. So I passed by his house because I was a bit early. I stopped. And I talked to him for about 15, 20 minutes. I'm complaining about the world, as you can imagine. This thing was raw. And he listened to me patiently. And after 20 minutes, so I asked him, so how are you? And he said his wife died this morning. And I thought, wow. I said, he listened to me for 20 minutes without interrupting me. And he said he was trying to make up his mind. His children are in Canada, in school. He was trying to make up his mind whether to go to Canada and tell them, because his wife died suddenly, to tell them that the mother died, or whether he should phone them, but he didn't know how they were handled, or whether he should tell someone who is in Canada to go and tell. He was trying to make up his mind, and he called me to ask my views. And I thought to myself, wow, wow, wow. Right? Now, when someone asks me, did I have a mental breakdown? Right? And I think, compare that to what this guy has gone through, right? I can replace everything I've lost. He can't.
That's true.
Neither can his children. And what has happened is we leave life impressions on the young children now in Canada. So everything's about perspective.
Would you be considering a different approach in future ventures?
Yeah, I said so. Diversification, you know, we'll do what we're good at. I'll be a little bit more, less trusting of the environment. And and maybe I wouldn't put as much money in one place.
If you could address Lagos, the federal government, what would you say?
Oh, it depends on what I'm asked to say here, right? But if I had a free hand, I'll say, look, you know, as a guys, you know, we have a tremendous opportunity, right? Lagos is the fifth biggest economy in Africa. Nigeria is the biggest economy in Africa as a country. Nigeria has the potential of being one of the five biggest economies in the world. You know, we have what it takes. We have the people. We have the burgeoning youth. We have the natural resources, right? We have the financial framework. We have the geography because we're in the center of Africa as well. Yeah. We're not far from everywhere. You know, we have the weather. We have no natural disasters. We just have a whole series of good things. As a matter of fact, there's this joke where they say when God was creating the continent, right? When he was creating this continent of Africa, he didn't give it natural disasters or bad weather and stuff. Yeah, and the angels asked, say, God, what why is this continent so privileged and all the others have still things? And he said, you wait until to see the people I put in charge. So I'll say, look, take this opportunity for the greater good. You know, the opportunity of a lifetime can only be realized in the lifetime of that opportunity. So there's a whole, there's a generational opportunity here. You know, I think it spans the last 2 or 3 years and the next sort of 6 or 7 years, right? You know, as I say, it takes a generation to turn things. And we've seen what's happened in many other countries, you know? So if you're in a leadership position, this is your opportunity to do something for mankind and for history that people will be talking about you for 200 years to come, right? Because nobody in life has ever been on their deathbed and asked, what's your biggest regret? And they say, I didn't make enough money, right?
Oh, it's true.
You know, it's all about change. It's all about legacy. It's all about other people. It's all about friends and family. So let's take this opportunity and try and make something good of it. And to do that, you have to be transparent. You have to be honest. I use two terms, authentic and transparent. You have to be authentic and you have to be transparent. You will make mistakes. You know, good decisions are not always popular and popular decisions are not always good.
Good.
Right? So you will make mistakes. You will be criticized. You will be hailed, right? But don't leave yourself in a bubble. Just make sure you know what the real world is thinking and figure out a way to make your own, you know, dink in the universe. You know, and I say that because, you know, I mean, we really just have to take more, we have to be more intentional about what we do, not just for our businesses, but for our community and for our government.
So let me put this in context, right? Mm-hmm. If you were to address Lagos State and the federal government directly, what would you say about the way the situation was handled? And what policy changes or protections do you think should be implemented to prevent future demolitions like this one?
So one is, I would say, you know, consultation is a very important part of negotiation, right? So one, I'll expect real consultation. I mean, it wasn't handled well. There's no point sugarcoating it. I think, and I'm not talking about just us, right? I'm just talking about the entire coastline and what was being done. I think consultation is important. And time, give time. Time is a friend, it's not an enemy. So consult over time. I would say sort out, you know, take all the views and figure out what's the best way forward. You may end up in the same place, but do the consultation. People like to be spoken to. The second thing is, you know, this is real. These are real lives. There's socioeconomic activity. Compensation is incredibly important. And instead of arguing over, well, I have the right to take anything on the waterfront. I have the right to do this. I have the right to do that. The whole thing is, well, you have the right to ensure that the citizens that you're empowered to serve are happy, right? So if you have 4,000 people working somewhere, and you know you have a 40% unemployment rate in the country, then find a way to ensure that those 4,000 people keep their jobs and multiply, right? So I think just speaking and consulting is the first step. The second step is just making sure that, you know, there's job replacement or activity replacement. And I would expect that. And I think thirdly, you know, I think, you know, even in the biggest tragedies, I think partnerships are important, right? There must be, and for partnerships to be important, there must be empathy. So when you see there's a war and two people are fighting, to create peace, those two people have to sit together. it's really as simple as that. So, you know, one, you can be as strong as you like, but you're never going to be victorious unless you sit down.
Yes.
I mean, we've seen that in the two major wars that are taking place in the world. You know, there's the weak and there's the strong, but there's still no winner.
There's still no winner. That's true.
No, yeah, because you have to sit down, you have to talk, and you have to find some kind of middle ground. And it's going to be painful in some instances because there's give and take. You know what they say? There's an Africa proverb that says, you can't be taller than me and shorter than me at the same time, you know? And so that would be my biggest advice to a government is, you can't be taller than me and shorter than me at the same time. You have to choose which one you are, right? And whichever one you are, it's fine. And at least if I know I'm shorter than you, then we discuss from that point of view.
Yeah.
If I'm taller than you, we discuss from that point of view. But we must arrive at something that for the benefit of everyone. Because, you know, when people say the government is not a person, right? The government is us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to have that reflection.
So let me take this a step further, make it more personal. So if your best friend were to walk up to you now and say, I want to invest in Lagos. What would you tell him? What advice would you give him precisely? What steps would you advise him to take? And I just needed to guide him.
So let me go on record because that we're raising money right now, right? So this is not a question of your best friend asking. This is a question of me going out and saying, people, please invest. And some of this money is going to be spent in Lagos, right? But, so I'll say three key things. The first thing is decide what it is you want to do. Right? And just make sure you have a medium to long-term view, right? Because especially if it's property, you must have a medium to long-term view. It's not a short-term investment. It's not a trade, right? And even though you may want your money back in 2, 3, 4 years, you have to be prepared to do sort of 3, 4, 5, 6 years or even further. So that's one. Two is partnerships or people. Yeah. So when you're investing in something, the second most important thing, apart from the thing you're investing in, are the people who control it.
Yes.
I remember Warren Buffett said he's never done a good deal with a bad person, right? So you have to understand the framework around that. You know, the third thing is mitigants. And you say to yourself, you know, what's the plan B, plan C, plan D of this company or this industry or this thing that you want to invest in? What are my mitigating factors? If this happens, what will I do? So you have to be rational and not emotional about choosing your investments. But I wouldn't say don't do it. I would say good idea, great idea. There are many challenges here, by the way, but there are also opportunities. So you have to sometimes unwrap those challenges to find opportunities. Make sure whatever you're investing has the potential to do that. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'll say it's a 7.
Well, that's a pass.
Yes. I'll say it's a 7 because it's opportunity. You can't do nothing. $10 in Lagos, yes, can be $20 tomorrow.
That's true.
$10 in the UK will be $12 tomorrow. Not can be, will be, right? Here, can be 20 or can be 5.
That's
right?
True.
So, you know, you must have some appetite.
So you mentioned investments. What investments do you have currently?
So I have 3 investments. Landmark, right? So Landmark is one. Two is I've invested very heavily in the health industry. As well as in the health industry, I'm part of the founding group that's set up a cancer hospital. We're partnered with the Roswell Park Cancer Institute of New York. And I don't know whether you know this, but West Africa has the highest incidence of certain types of cancers in the world. So Roswell Park, the oldest cancer institute in the world, you know, want to play a big part in not necessarily eradicating cancer, but understanding it and curing it and treating it. The biggest issue in West Africa is detection. People don't know on time, and cancer is looked at as a pariah. It's not a disease that people want to talk about, right?
That's true.
You know, but you know, cancer is not a disease, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's a situation that what has to be dealt with. So I'm heavily invested in that. We're building the first bespoke cancer institute. Just literally a stone throw from Landmark. You know, when this whole Coastal Road thing was going on, I thought, bloody hell, I hope this thing doesn't run through here, right? Because we've been on it for 10 years and it had so much international donor money in it. I was very, very concerned. It took us 3.5 years just to get the planning consent for this thing. So that's a story for another day. So that's a big investment for me. And the next one is, you may or may not know, there's a popular reality TV program called Lion's Den.
It's the
Nigerian version of Dragon's Den Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. Yes. Obviously I'm on it, and I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of social and economic entrepreneurs that are young and vibrant and have great ideas. And I invested in 7 of them over the last 3 years. I've lost my money in 4. And but three of them are doing extremely well. And it just shows there's just so much hope in Nigeria. I mean, one of them has probably returned 10 times my money already.
You also said something, right? You spoke about investors. So now one thing our platform does is, like I said, we sell real estate. We have lots of investors and we get calls from people who are like, I don't want to buy real estate. I want to invest somewhere, you know. So are there projects, are there things that you need investors, you know, to come on board?
Yeah, so we're at the moment in a private placement. So we're raising money for the what we call Landmark 2.0, for the next phase of Landmark, this whole West Africa string. A significant amount of that money will be spent in Nigeria, but a significant amount of it will be spent across West Africa. As I said, we're trying to create a tourist platform. So we're speaking to institutions and individuals and HNIs to raise money. So without campaigning and advertising, we're certainly happy and open to take good, clean investor money that we believe will grow. But, you know, it's a real estate project. As I said, over 5 to 7 year period, we're not looking to return people's money in 2 years. So that's that. We also have our Landmark Waterview apartments. And, you know, you say you sell real estate, you should sell our Waterview apartments. You know, it's 50% sold and we're halfway through the construction at the moment. 80% of people who bought are diaspora, by the way. So I was very interested when you have good connections with diaspora. Yes. So you come and work with us on that.
Sure, definitely.
So that's an opportunity. You know, we think it's a lifestyle apartment. As I said, we're looking for ways to return our platform back to a business leisure lifestyle platform. So this will do extremely well. But that's us as Landmark.
Okay.
I think outside Landmark and, you know, in the market, there's several great opportunities. It's just that I don't invest in things like telecoms and fintechs and stuff. I don't invest outside where I already am. But, you know, I look at some of these opportunities and some of them are billion-dollar ideas. I mean, there's great opportunities in Africa, especially the ones that are mass market. The one thing I will say to people is be very careful about investing in niche activities in Africa. And niche means you're targeting just a small section of the society. Be extremely careful because that section is very fickle. Anything can happen, right? Yeah. But when you do mass market things, you just can't go wrong because the tide is in your direction, right? This country is going to grow. The people are going to grow. These 220 or 210 million people are going to be 300 million in a few years and 400 million in a few more years. You know, so there's always a good opportunity when you're dealing in a mass market affordable commodity. It was one of the biggest issues we had as well because, you know, our beach was a mass market affordable commodity. The average spend there was 10,000 naira. So, you know, even though we're providing what I would like to believe as world-class luxury facilities, but it wasn't for the high end and the high net worth, it was for every basic person.
You mentioned that it was no brainer that demolitions shouldn't have happened, given that your business was the biggest tourist attraction in Lagos.
In West Africa.
In West Africa, okay. But in developed nations globally, demolitions also affect big businesses.
Absolutely.
So in your opinion, what approach do you think or wish the government took? And how better could the government have handled the situation without putting so many people out of business?
Well, I just think, as I said earlier, communication. You see, when you speak to people, people give you ideas, right? So if you're speaking to people who are going to be affected, I tell you something, I defy anybody to tell me outside war in a Western nation where somebody has turned up and in 7 days they've lost their life's work. It hasn't happened. I can tell you that without even researching. It would take 5 years from when you wake someone up and say, you know, when you planned this, I wasn't around, but now I'm around, I'm going to remove it, right? It would take 5 years before you remove that thing. Minimum, probably much longer. Time is a friend. It's not an enemy, right? And when you're doing major infrastructure projects for the greater good, the only thing you have is time. Yeah? Unless you have other motives, right? The only thing you have is time. So I strongly believe that, you know, from advice terms is talk. Talk to people, communicate, discuss. We do that in our private lives. There are many things I will do that will upset my wife, right? But if I've spoken to her beforehand, it wouldn't upset her, right? When people know what's coming, they're just a little bit more insulated than when they don't know what's coming. So surprise is an enemy. Conversation is a friend. You know, so and people say this a lot. They say, oh, well, you know, in all, in, you know, it happens everywhere. Of course, it happens everywhere. You go and find out about Heathrow Airport when it was being expanded 20 years before they could build the fourth runway. They're still working on it. They still haven't gotten the approval because there's conversations. There's conversations. When the O2 Center was built, there were many people who were displaced. Did you know how long it took? You know, when you think of King's Cross expansion, I'm just dealing with the UK where I live, right? I just know that any major infrastructure project that has impact, ultimately, yes, you will get it through. But it takes time because these are real people.
Yeah.
And it's for those people, by the way. Yes. It's not for nobody. So when you do major, you know, and then, you know, this Lagos-Calabar Road, it's an infrastructure project for the country. It's not, yeah, or at least for a section of the country, right? It's not, you know, if I was sitting in Gombe State, I'd be like, "What? Why are you spending my money there, right?" But if you're anywhere on that Lagos to Calabar road line, assuming you believed it would get done, right? You're not going to complain to, well, even if you complain today, at some point you should be reasonably pleased if it does what it's meant to do, yeah, because it's done properly. So, but you have to sensitize people. And you have to do things properly. And that's all I pray and I plead for our leaders to understand is be patient, right? Take your time. It doesn't have to be within your own political lifespan that things are done. What must be done is to ensure that the greater good of the people over time is respected.
Mm. So you believe that the Lagos-Calabar Coastal Road is a big plus to the country?
You know, you're putting me on the spot here. You know, so, you know, first of all, you have to understand, you know, we lost almost everything with this thing, right? So I'm coming from that point of view in the, yeah, first instance. So, you know, if I had my choice, would it be there? Of course not, no, right? But I also went on record, and I've been on record even here, saying, you know, coastal roads are a good idea, right? And when you do them in a certain way. You limit the damage to socioeconomic activity because it's meant to enhance it, not destroy it.
Sure.
Right? So a road in a country, infrastructure in any in a growing and developing country is hugely important. Every road is important. Every sidewalk, every electric plant, every gas plant. But, you know, things get hurt when these things are being done, right? But they're all important. It's how you do them that matters. Yes. And how you deal with the people who are hurt that matters the most. Yeah.
So any final words to investors out there?
So my final word for Nigeria, I'll say, look, as I said, Nigeria has a unique set of challenges and opportunities. It's not one size fits all. You do need to figure out what you like and what you don't like, what risks you're prepared to take and what risks you're not prepared to take, and what the amounts of money you're prepared to lose and what you're not prepared to lose. You need to cut your coat according to your size here. Expect the unexpected, because if you don't think it will happen, trust me, it may happen. It probably will happen, right? But both the good and the bad happen, right? But if you do want high rewards and you're prepared to take high risks, don't shy away from Nigeria just because you heard that Landmark Beach was demolished. Don't shy away from Nigeria. If you're concerned about... don't sell your main home and invest here just like that, right?
Yeah.
So I think be balanced about it. It's not one size fits all.
I want you to be a real estate mentor for the next 2-3 minutes. So we need tips, ideas. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. Tips, ideas on how to navigate this terrain to first-time home buyers, investors.
Mm. Yeah, so I said something at the beginning. You know, the opportunity of a lifetime can only be realized in the lifetime of that opportunity. So again, it's about timing. Real estate is all about timing. So one of the first tips I would say is understand the timing. The fact that something's happening in Kano, right, in real estate, doesn't mean it's going to be happening in Lagos, right? And the fact that something's happening in New York doesn't mean it's going to be happening in Lagos either. So you have to balance your supply and demand. You have to balance what it is you're doing, the market you're chasing, right? So the first tip is timing. Make sure your timing is right, whether you're buying, building, or selling, right? Real estate as a commodity takes time to produce. So the time you go into it, you buy the land, you get the financing, you go through the planning permissions, you do the building, you bring it out. It comes out at a very different time from when you went in, right? The second thing is financial longevity. You just need to have, we're in a country where the unexpected happens, so you must have financial bandwidth. So if you're building something to sell, that you think it will cost you 20 units to build and you can sell it at 30 units. Just assume you can sell it at 25 units and it may cost you 23 units to build. Just, you must have that bandwidth to cope with shocks. If you don't, you will be underwater. That will be my second bet. My third thing is something I said not long ago is, you know, I hate niche markets. I absolutely hate niche markets. You always get hurt. You get hurt a lot more times than you gain, mm-hmm. right? So if you're an early and not so experienced real estate punter, whether it's a developer or a service provider or a buyer, but an investor all the same, try to stay out of the niche markets, try and stay in the mainstream markets. The one good thing going for this country is the number of people and the burgeoning youth population, right? Now, obviously, if you don't train these guys and you don't house them, you don't give them jobs, it's a threat, not an opportunity. But let's just assume that the powers that be understand that and they do get jobs and they do get taken care of and they do get educated and do get healthcare, right? The one thing that you can guarantee is that all these people will be in the demand space, mm-hmm. right? And there's nowhere near the amount of supply. So there's an opportunity there if you go for a mass market. And the last thing is diversification, right? Just try to be not just geographically diversified, but unit diversified. I just like, when it comes to real estate, and again, I'm talking about real estate. When it comes to real estate, I like to see places that are all in one place. I'm a big believer in the mixed-use environment. I think the world has moved far away from, I'm going to build my house here, I'm going to work over here, and I'm going to go and play over here, mm-hmm. right? You have to combine at least two out of those three things.
Live, play.
Yes. You have got to do live, work, play. Or you do work and play, or you do live and play, or you do live and work. But ideally, you want to do all three, right? But, you know, be very careful about just the live or just the work or just the play, because the world is getting smaller. There's a drive for efficiency. People are impatient. People want things now. When you're in countries like this, the infrastructure issues, the utility issues, the traffic issues, the security issues, there's just so many issues that people don't want to move far. How many times are your friend invites you for a party and you look at the IV and you say, oh gosh.
I know.
I can't go there. The traffic will be terrible, right?
Yeah.
How many times, right? But when it's next door, you have no problem.
That's true. Right?
So real estate is location. Mm-hmm. Location, location, location.
Give me an example of a niche market in the real estate sector.
I'll do better than that. I'll give you three examples, right? So let's start with residential, right? So you build a tower block, swimming pool on the roof, all sorts of facilities. Each apartment is a billion naira. That's a niche market, right? There's just not that many people walking around with a billion naira. And you know, when you think about it, anybody who has a billion naira already lives somewhere. And they're more likely than not happy with where they live. Yeah?
True.
So it takes a lot to drag them over there. So some may buy it because in this country, real estate looks at as meat in the freezer, right? They think, I can give it to my child or my friend or my wife or my husband or my girlfriend or my boyfriend, right? But it's looked at as meat in the freezer. It's almost like a commodity that people use to save money. You know, people go and buy land and sit on it for 10 years, right? It's a very emotional thing in this country. So that's a niche market in residential, is you're targeting a very small audience that you may or may not find. Commercial. A niche market is an office block standing in the middle of nowhere that has all these
amazing
facilities, right? But you know, the truth is, you know, we built an office block. It cost us $40 million to build it. It's 10 floors and it's 15,000 square meters, right? To rent that place at less than $500 a square meter, you're underwater. You're underwater, right? Now you've got to ask yourself, when we built it, $500, you know, it was 30,000 naira.
Yeah.
Yeah? $500 today. Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. You see, we can't even do the maths, right? So the problem with commercial real estate is those people who were in this country before are no longer here. They've gone. And the ones that are here are not prepared to pay those monies. They've either shrunk and they've downsized to the point at which they can't do that. So you're in a very, very delicate situation if you have an office block in the middle of nowhere with no other services or attractions, right? That's an office. And let's move into leisure space. The thing you hear a lot of people doing are the difference between a spa and a gym. So, you know, you see all these very luxury spas. Look, you have very limited clientele. Yeah. And at some point, they're going to just stop coming, right? Because another spa is going to come up.
Yeah,
soon,
that's true.
Right? So I think it's just a huge risk unless it's an emotional project. But a gym is a very different, you know, there's a movement towards health, the unit economics of a gym, you know, I don't know how much they are these days, but you know, if someone pays 20 or 30,000 naira or 10,000 naira a month, you know, it's affordable, people do it, it's trendy, there are a lot of young people and people actually use it, right? So it's a mass market product while the spa is a niche product, yeah? So that's how I balance it. And you see two tower blocks next to each other. You know, one of them is, you know, swimming pool on the roof, large bathrooms, large spaces. You know, each apartment is expensive. And you see the one next to it, small apartments, studio apartments, one bed, two beds, you know, really practical, but in the same location. I mean, I know which one I'll go for, right? as an investment. So you see these things every day and you look at them and you think, you make your bet on where you would like to be.
This has been so interesting. I have learned a lot and I believe my viewers have also learned a lot. Thank you so much, Mr. Paul, for sharing your story. It's one thing to hear from other people, from the news, from the media. It's another thing to hear directly from you. And I mean, you've changed lots of narratives. A lot of people watching this have their perspective, but I'm sure after this podcast, a lot of things, mindsets have been shifted. So thank you so much, sir, for coming on our podcast. And to you out there, thank you for watching. Now, I know a lot of you would be thinking, how can I go ahead and invest? Because like I said, we have lots of investors outside who call confidence. I don't want to buy a house. I just want to invest in something. And okay, give me a timeline and I'll make my return on investment. And yes, we're here. Just send us an email. And of course, I have access to you and I'll get all the necessary information across to you. Once again, thank you very much, sir, and thank you for watching. This is Key to Keys KK Show. My name is Confident and I'll see you again in our next episode. Thank you.